Woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil sends the beast with wrath, because he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 666.
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the Dark. Today we have a big show talking about Satanism versus devil worship, pacts with the devil, and playing my interview with a channeler via Wamis. But before we get to all that, I just want to remind you that we're doing a Patreon campaign right here at Radio Free Brooklyn. So if you want to contribute, feel free to pop on over to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. I'll see the rest of you over at the other end of the theme music here on Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers, and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not always.
In the often erotic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down, of course.
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, the show that takes you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. Got a big show for you today, talking mostly about the devil, but before we get to that, got a little bit of witchcraft news for you. Most of it's New York specific, and that's basically that one, Catland, which was shut down by the fire marshal during their Krampusnacht celebration, is back in action. As of the end of last week, they are now open for business again to serve all your witchy needs. And there's a new kid on the block. I bumped into a store on Metropolitan Avenue here in Brooklyn called Quimby's Bookstore, right off the Lorimer stop on the L. And they've got an occult section, and not only that, but apparently they're in talks to get some of the things that were held at the Morbid Anatomy Museum before that place got shut down for lack of funds. So death is going to live on in the form of this new place, Quimby's, which apparently is a colony of a larger bookstore out in Chicago. But that aside, let's get into our regularly scheduled witchcraft business. So our first question today, dear Into the Dark, is there a difference between Satanism and devil worship? And this is a great question. It's something that I've been getting a lot from people. And so I'm glad that someone finally gave me the opportunity to talk about it on the show, because this distinction is really important, and there is certainly a distinction. And so I'm gonna give you a quick rundown that you can use when dealing with various people from various sects to know what they're into and whether or not you should treat them with a certain amount of caution. And to make everything simpler, I'm going to use a system here. I've devised a very clever system. So, if a sect believes in the existence of a satanic or devil figure and worships that figure, they're going to hear this sound. Ooh. But if that is not the case, they get... All right, so let's start off with the form of Satanism that most people hear about. That's Levian Satanism, also known as the Temple of Satan. That's right, they don't actually believe in the existence of the devil. Also in the might. Bear in mind, with all this, is going to be broad strokes, so individuals may practice things differently, but on the whole, the Temple of Satan don't believe in the existence of Satan. Founded in 1966 by Anton Szandor LaVey, they're an organization that primarily works as a kind of atheism that's like a bit more rock and roll, a bit more aggressive. There's a certain contempt for other religions involved in that. So when the Vae founded it, he apparently shaved his head as part of a formalized founding ritual in the tradition of medieval executioners, carnival strongmen, and black magicians before him. With the intention of starting a place that had a certain kind of carnival atmosphere, saying, quote, "We blended a formula of 9 parts social respectability to 1 part outrage. We established the Church of Satan, something that could smash all concepts of what a church was supposed to be. This was a temple of indulgence to openly defy the temples of abstinence that had been built up until then. We didn't want it to take on an unforgiving, or to be an unforgiving, unwelcoming place, but a place where you could go to have fun." And further that, let's hear from the man himself.
Do you believe in God? Do you believe in Jesus Christ?
No. No. Irrevocably not. I believe that the Godhead resides within oneself. I believe that man creates gods in accordance with his own needs. And if he doesn't, someone else will create them for him.
Who or what is Satan to you?
Satan is the essence of that which dwells within myself.
Would you explicitate this?
Satan is the pioneer, the inventor, Prometheus. Satan has always been the scapegoat, the other, as Thomas Szasz, the psychiatrist, calls him. He has always been the opposition to what has been established at the time, the counterbalance that creates change, that creates evolution, that sets the climate socially for modification. Because without this so-called evil, there could be no change.
Listen.
And since they're founding the Temple of Satan has taken on a more sort of political role, so they've been sort of standing up for people's individual rights. There was a recent move by the Church of Satan to file a lawsuit against a restriction on abortion, arguing that control over one's whole body is one of their religious tenets. And I recently saw that a number of temples were offering to send their members to escort Muslims who were worried about Islamophobia and being attacked in the street. A quote from the temple in San Jose says, "If there's anyone in the San Jose region who is a Muslim and afraid to leave their home out of fear for some kind of backlash, don't hesitate to reach out to us. We would be glad to escort you where you need to go without advertising our presence, just big dudes walking you where you need to be." So that's the Satanic Temple. Basically, atheists who are a bit more rock and roll. Now, this is not to say that there are not people who call themselves Satanists who actually worship the devil. Worship devil worshippers, one might call them. And these folks, some of them are not that bad. Because, sorry, I forgot to do that with theistic or theistic Satanism. Because some of them basically take a Gnostic view where they believe that God, the God of the Old Testament, the God of the Bible, is the creator of an evil earth and is a sort of lesser deity through which we have to sort of bypass to get to the greater universal benevolent creator, Satan. But there are others who basically worship the devil as an evil figure and do evil on his behalf. For example, Carl H. Drew in 1980 was a pimp and occultist who basically organized the group of prostitutes under his control as a satanic coven and went to jail for a ritualistic murder that involved him speaking in tongues and drawing a X in somebody's blood on someone else's forehead. And then, of course, there were, you know, like the beasts of Satan in Italy who committed 3 murders, one of which was deeply ritualistic and involved burying someone alive in a greenhouse. Like, these can be very scary people, and they are worth watching out for. So that's theistic Satanism, or devil worship, which is actually pretty dangerous. There is a difference. And the next one I want to talk about is the Temple of Set. And the Temple of Set was founded in 1975 by Michael Aquino. They're an offshoot of the Temple of Satan. Michael Aquino objected to the Temple of Satan because he felt that it attracted, quote, fad followers, egomaniacs, and assorted oddballs whose primary interest in becoming Satanists was to flash their membership cards for cocktail party notoriety. So he wanted to basically, the Temple of Set basically believes that Satan, or the word Satan, is a corruption of the word Set, which is an older Egyptian god who they believe does exist, but they do not worship. They instead revere him as an example, a kind of Promethean figure for making oneself into a god. If you can be like Set, you can sort of make yourself into a being who could live forever. Unlike those who do not engage in that sort of practice, whose souls would dissolve with their bodies when they die. They're more into actually doing magic, which is sort of one of the big differences between them and more rational Satanism, which is what Levian Satanism is sometimes called. But this has led them down some scary roads. So in 1983, their founder, Michael Aquino, went to a castle in Germany that was the former headquarters of the SS and did a rite to try to summon the ghost of Heinrich Himmler, and has been accused of Nazi sympathies. He's also actually been accused of leading a child sex ring, which is horrifying, especially given that he was for a while the head of the NSA here in the United States. But luckily, the Temple of Set is estimated to have only between 200 and 500 members, so that's not such a big group, though many of them may very well be in the United States government. And we have to remember that they do have tax-exempt status, so well done there. Horrifying. So people to avoid. And last but not least, we have people often accused of being devil worshippers, the Yazidis. So the Yazidis are a religious minority in places like Iraq and Syria. They were recently in the news for being the victims of a massacre by ISIS. And they've been accused since at least the 16th century of devil worship because they revere a figure named Malik Taus, who was an angel, the peacock angel, who they believe is God's favorite angel upon the earth because he refused to bow down to Adam for his love of God, wanting only to bow to God himself, which they see as a test of his love for God, whereas similar stories in Islam and Christianity see that as the turning point when Satan, in refusing to bow to Adam, began his rebellion against God and became a satanic figure. I'm going kind of quickly because we're running right out of time. Ooh, might have to actually get to the Pax of the Devil next week or next month. That's unsettling. But let's get started with that, just because give you a taste of what Pax of the Devil is going to be like next month, because I don't think we have time to get into all of it. Let's just start. Let's see what happens. So I was sent a question about Pax of the Devil, and that question went, "Dear Into the Dark, I have heard that if you enter into a contract as a minor, you can legally back out of the contract within the first 6 months of your majority, 18 years. Does this mean you can sell your soul as a minor and then reap the benefits, fame, fortune, Manhattan real estate, with secure knowledge that you can back out once you reach adulthood?" Great question. So, when it comes to selling your soul to the devil, there is a rich and storied tradition of people trying to do this. Saint Theophilus, in a story written between 650 and 850 AD, is said to have sold his soul to the devil, writing his name on a contract with his own blood to try to become a bishop. That's sort of the oldest story of this happening, but these sorts of narratives have been moving on through history. You know, there's talk of Dr. Faust from Christopher Marlowe's Faustus, who is based on a real person. If you want to, you can go through German municipal records from the 1500s and see him getting kicked out or fined in a lot of places for causing rabble. And we can go more in depth with that, given how much time we have. Oh my gosh, we are running right out of time. This is very disappointing. I think I'm going to record an addendum to the podcast version of this so you can get the full story. But the short version is this. There were a number of trials for people accused of signing their soul away to the devil in a contract in Sweden. And the Swedish court system found that you could deem the contract nullified if it did not follow the proper methodology of an actual contract. There was a fellow named Anders Mertensson, who went on trial in 1694 for signing a contract to the devil, but it was found that the contract could not be legally binding because he did not sign it and he did not date it. But that's just a taste. We'll give you more in the podcast version of this because, golly gosh, there's so much to talk about. But in the meantime, here's my interview with the channeler of Viwamis, who welcomed me into his home to chat, Halsey Snow. I'll see you on the other side.
Just at the very beginning, what is channeling? What does that process entail?
Well, channeling is really based on the, you could say, belief or idea that each person is what we refer to as a multidimensional being. And we use that term instead of the word spiritual, because spiritual has certain connotations we're trying to avoid. Multidimensional simply means you are obviously a being that has existence in more than one dimension. And everyone talks about, you know, this being the third dimension. And in physics or in, you know, geography, that's usually considered to be height, width, depth, whatever. But I think what it really means is the fact that you, each human being, can reference themselves in the mental, in the emotional, and in the physical. And each of those is a different dimensional format, which is pretty obvious when you start to look at it. The mind that we know, the way we know the mind right now, works primarily with thoughts. Unless, of course, you're into meditation, in which you discover a whole different experience of the mind outside the realm of thoughts. But pretty much the world that most people live in terms of the mental sphere, is based on thought. Thoughts, ideas, beliefs, however you want to refer to it. And then you've got the emotional aspect of yourself, feelings. And this is a realm which is really much less explored than the mental world or the physical world. And it's one of the things that actually in our work with Viwamis and our work as channels that we've actually done a lot of work with is exploring, we call it the emotional body, and the dynamics therein and the role that it plays in the overall experience of being human and so on. So there's a lot of unexplored territory there that goes beyond just the simple idea of feelings. I mean, most people really aren't brought up with much awareness of their feelings or much, when you think of the education that goes into the mind mm-hmm. and the body, how different we might be if as much emphasis were placed on the understanding and the reception and the awareness of self on an emotional level.
So when you're channeling Viwamis, mm-hmm. is the experience of that for you, is that a primarily sort of verbal experience? Is that an emotional experience? In what sense do you feel connected or feel the presence or influence of Viwamis?
First of all, I have to say it's a subtle thing.
Okay.
And it's not anything about me that's different than anyone else that makes me a channel.
So anyone could do this?
Anyone could do this, right? You have to have the intention, and you have to be willing to go beyond a little bit the boundaries of what you consider to be yourself. And it's helpful to think of yourself as a multidimensional being. You know, a very easy metaphor for it is think of a radio, okay? A radio can access, you know, used to be a few different stations when I was growing up, but, you know, hundreds, thousands of stations. Think of all the different internet domains now, you know, as an analogous to old-fashioned radio. How do you get to each, how do you get to different ones by tuning it differently? Mm-hmm. And your energy field, whether you access that mentally, emotionally, or physically, or multidimensionally, doesn't matter, has that same ability to you know, you can tune yourself to different dimensional experiences, and you can bring that through you. You can have the experience yourself. You know, that's what people who see things are doing. People who see auras, people who see ghosts, people who see other beings, you know, they're accessing it visually. People hear things sometimes in their head. Sometimes it seems like it's outside of themselves. They're accessing it auditorily. Some people feel things in their body physically. So obviously your sensory apparatus, if you want to call it that, has much more ability than we tend to make use of.
And when you are channeling by Weymouth, is there a particular sense that seems to be more in tune with that sort of frequency, or?
Not that I could clearly say for myself.
Okay.
For me, it's more a matter of getting my mind out of the way.
Okay.
And being willing to allow something other than what I know already in my realm of, you know, who I think I am,
yeah,
to come through, usually in the format of, you know, working with another person. Now, I can channel for myself, and I, you know, sometimes do that if I have, it's like having a conversation with yourself in your head, mm-hmm, only you're pretending that the one you're having a conversation with is not you.
Right.
And you can come up with some very, you know, interesting things, some very helpful things. You know, when you think of spiritual guidance, whether it's from a minister, a pastor, you know, a friend, someone who supposedly is more knowledgeable in spiritual realms, you think of, you know, the kind of thing that can help you to look at things from a different perspective other than the one you're taking, which you're in reaction to. Mm. And channeling is really the same way. You know, there's awarenesses that we all have of ourselves and our experience and our world and other people that goes beyond our immediate senses. And the question becomes, what are you going to do with that? Most people don't develop that skill or don't even think about it because they're so focused on the senses that they've got. But it doesn't mean you can't.
Right.
So
how did you first begin developing this sort of ability or this sort of practice?
I began it really by becoming interested in my own personal development, mm-hmm, beyond the what you might call the spiritual upbringing I had. I was raised Catholic, mm-hmm, went to Catholic schools, Catholic college, and at some point, just in college and so on, began reading. Of course, you're then exposed to different philosophies, different religions, and they all seem foreign. But, you know, the more reading you do, I think it was when I started reading something along the lines of metaphysical works that something started to click. There's something more than just what's presented in the traditional spiritual teachings realm. And so I began to explore that for myself and began to seek out other channels who, this was before I was channeling, who could give me some guidance from teachers who are not, as we say, in a physical body. You know, in the metaphysical realm, there is the concept of what are called ascended masters.
Okay.
And ascended masters on Earth, most of them are beings who have lived through numerous physical incarnations, have evolved themselves in all the ways that everyone is evolving themselves, to a point where, according to the philosophy, you actually vibrate yourself on a physical level. You increase your vibration to the point where your physical body transmutes into pure light, is one way of talking about it, in which case you no longer have a physical body per se, but you still exist in this realm with your other multidimensional bodies, and then communication becomes an issue. You know, communication is an issue if you think of, go back to the radio metaphor.
Yeah.
One thing about the radio metaphor that doesn't really work too well is that radio stations don't really talk to each other.
Mm.
They all talk to the listener.
Yeah.
And the listener can tune to different stations, but you don't hear about radio stations talking to each other or internet domains talking to each other. You know, that's the kind of separation that we've put into the technology, mm, that, you know, mirrors in some ways our own belief in separation in ourselves. But that's not really the way it is in terms of life in the multidimensional realm.
Who are some examples of ascended masters that you, I mean, is there anyone who has done this sort of transmutation that people might have heard of before? to give them a
sure.
chance.
Yeah. A lot of people have heard of the Ascended Master Saint Germain. In fact, this was a surprise to me. Saint Germain is actually listed in the Encyclopedia of Catholic Saints, which is a pretty big encyclopedia, I have to tell you. But anyway, so Saint Germain is one. Others that people might have heard of, Kuan Yin.
Kuan Yin?
Okay. Yeah, Kuan Yin is was an Oriental lady, very well known. El Moria is another one. The Ascended Master Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who relate to Jesus outside the framework of Christianity. There's also a master named Maitreya, who is considered to be the one that's been holding the office of the Christ. And there's another master named, one who's very connected to Vaiwamis, called Sanat Kumara. And Sanat Kumara is the being who currently, as we say, ensouls the earth.
What does that mean exactly, to ensoul the earth?
Well, you think most people have, or a lot of people have, an idea of you having a soul.
Yeah.
And the soul is some part of you on a spiritual level that is greater than you, but still is you. And so you are seen to be a part of the soul. You could say the soul is the part of you that opens the space and holds the focus for your experience here on a human level, for whatever it is you and the soul, the greater part of yourself, desires to get from the experience.
So in your understanding, you would say that, like, it's not so much that a person has a soul, but a soul
has
manifests
a
itself as a person. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in metaphysical teachings and philosophies, they say that a soul, a single soul, can have up to 9 extensions on the planet at any one time. And that means different lives of people, all connected to the same soul, most of whom never really meet each other. And so, you know, the whole idea of soul brothers, soul sisters, you know, soul mates.
Yeah, yeah.
This is where that's coming from, in a way. You know, a lot of people think of soulmate as someone who comes along that has sort of the identical everything that you do.
Yeah.
And so you get to meet yourself and, oh, it's wonderful to see myself in reflection. And it's not the idea that I would say of a soulmate, but, you know, it's one idea.
You do sessions with people in which you channel Vaiwamis.
Mm-hmm.
What is sort of the goal of those sessions? Like, what sort of work is being done there?
Okay. Well, Vaiwamis is a teacher of transformation, and he's a teacher of teachers. And when I say he, I only use that to kind of give a sense of, you know, that.
What sort of being is Vaiwamis, if you had to categorize? Or is that an unfair question to ask?
It's just a difficult question to answer.
Okay.
You know, he's not an ascended master on the earth plane as other ascended masters are. And he's never been incarnated on the earth.
Okay.
He says he's been through the experience of physicality and physical lifetimes many times, but on other planets. And he's a very large being in the sense that he says that he's got about 500 channels all over the earth, not all of whom know necessarily that they're channeling him.
Okay.
But fundamentally, he's a teacher of transformation. And through the work that I've been doing with my wife, who's my partner,
mm-hmm.
Specifically with Vaiwamis over the last 20 years, he's been giving us a set of tools and concepts to evolve ourselves, to evolve the human being beyond where we are now in the sense of the mind, the feelings, the multidimensional self. So what goes on in a session, it could be, you know, people come with concerns, with questions, with a desire for some help,
mm-hmm.
something they're dealing with in their life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why people go to therapy. That's why people have friends. That's why people go to school to learn different things.
Yeah.
You know, we want to change. Mm-hmm. And change is not something that you really need to create so much yourself. It's happening all the time. But the tools we have for dealing with change are the real issue. And when you go to school, and I've been through the educational system as far as you can take it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a doctorate.
You have a PhD, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm, in psychology from Boston University. So, and I think I had a very good education. I appreciate it very much. I wasn't so much into the physical sports. When I was younger, I was. But it's really, education is pretty much of the mind.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the more you know, the more you're aware of, the more you understand the connections, mm-hmm. That's what education's all about. When you go to deal with yourself, that's a whole different story. Then you got to start dealing with the emotional body and your feelings and your experience. And the fundamental thing about the teachings of Vaiwamas, a fundamental, you could say, first starting point is he starts from the position that you are the creator of your experience. And another probably familiar metaphysical concept, we are all one. And a lot of people have heard that one, right? We are all one. A lot of people think it, a lot of people say it, but very few people really understand what that means, because we appear to live in a world of separation where I say, you're not me. That's not me. I'm so focused when I look in my world of perception around me, I'm not me. And I don't think about where does that come from if we are all one? So one of the primary tools that we work with in our work with Vaiwamas is called the reflective process. And that, again, that's a concept a lot of people have heard. The world is a mirror. You're looking at yourself. What do you see in the mirror? Take it back to yourself if you want to see what's going on with you. Basic concept.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit complicated in actually working with it because of the role of what we would call denial. Not denial so much in the psychological therapeutic sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does take that into account. But denial in the sense that, and this is a very Eastern concept.
Okay.
The world is an illusion. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What does that mean? Well, it means that the world that you perceive, that you see as real, that you respond to, that you, quote, take in and relate to.
Yeah.
First of all, is your own creation, because that comes back to you're the creator of your experience.
Okay.
I would say you're the creator of your perception, because that's really what we're working with, is our perception. Mm-hmm. And what you see is distorted. And it's distorted by this process we have going on in our psyche of denial. Now, we can call it denial. That's a very psychological term. In our work, we've been calling it pretend.
Okay.
Because people can relate to that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I mean, a basic definition of denial would be that you pretend something is different than it really is.
Right.
And more lately, we've been using the term illusion, just because when you use a certain term so much in working with people, you know, it kind of gets taken for granted, and you have to use a different term to keep your focus on what's really going on. So Vaiwamas works with tools of transformation and concepts that can bring you to a very, very different perception of yourself and your experience, and has the potential to, you know, help you to relate to yourself and your experience very differently outside of the position of victim, which is really how most people relate to themselves and their experience. Because if you think something or someone else is not you, really, the only other position that can put them in is that of perpetrator. Because if they're in your experience, why are they in your experience? Well, we would say, you know, that's a mirror for you. You're asking yourself to look at something in yourself that you have been in denial is you. So it gives kind of a different picture to what we would call the purpose of the human experience. You know, I would say one definition of that would be the purpose of the human experience is to evolve yourself. And what does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, what it means is to receive things that are going on inside of you that you are unconscious of,
okay,
that you are pretending are not part of you. If we're going to really step into this, all is one.
Yeah.
And all is me.
Is that the ultimate goal of this sort of transformation?
Well, you can call it a goal, but, you know, I would go back to some things that I've read from Osho. Have you ever heard of Osho?
I have not.
Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh is one of the ways he was known. Well, he gave a lecture once, and it was fascinating, in which the whole point of it was to tell all the people that were working with him, who were all seeking something and wanting something more. He said, what's the point of seeking something you already have? People want enlightenment, they want, you know, but you've already got it. So why don't we experience that? Well, you're limited by a couple things. One, your idea of what it is. Mm. And number two, this whole process I mentioned earlier about denial, distorting your perception. See, we're like masters. Every human being is a master. Now, when you have the idea of a master, what do a lot of people think? Well, a master is someone who knows it all, like God, right, who knows it all. Well, no, actually that's not what a master is, because believe it or not, even masters have unconsciousness. It has to do with the nature of the relationship that you create within yourself between what we call your consciousness and your unconscious. Because really, the vast majority of you is the unconscious. And it's only a small little piece that's conscious. Yet that small little piece has a very important role to play in the evolution of all of self. And I would frame that role in terms of what I would call a catalyst.
Okay.
You know, in chemistry, a catalyst is something that makes a reaction go faster.
Yeah.
Right? That's what consciousness is. When you use your consciousness in a way that it's intended to be used, mm-hmm. you actually make your whole process of self-evolution go faster. Now, of course, there's programming inside a self in the unconscious.
Okay.
And the programming, you know, is set up to kind of run everything on automatic.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like keep everything status quo. Mm-hmm. No expansion of consciousness. You know, just blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, your day-to-day quotidian needs and all that.
Right. And so, and that's really what runs the vast majority of humanity. I'm not saying that to be, you know, judgmental or critical, just other than to recognize it's me too.
Yeah, calling a spade a spade.
And, you know, I've got my patterns and my habits and my likes and dislikes like everyone else. And it takes some work working with these tools of consciousness that Vaiwamas teaches. Mm-hmm. Some real focus and application to get out of that comfort zone of programming that we've made so unconscious that it can run on automatic and we don't even recognize it.
Yeah.
We don't recognize that we're running it.
So when people come to you with a particular issue, is part of the work helping them recognize the ways in which this is the effect of programming, or is this...
Yeah, you know, it really depends on where the person is at. You know, a very beginner coming to work, you know, we would start dealing with some of the basic, the idea of reflection,
okay.
the idea of you're creating your experience, you know, what do you think you're getting out of it? You know, what do you want to change here? And also recognizing that most of the ways that people approach change, they're using tools that are really different forms of denial that basically go around in a circle.
Yeah,
you can make something unconscious in your life again and pretend that you've changed it. But if you don't find a way to step outside your programming, it just runs and it'll come up again. And this is one of the main reasons why most people have the experience of repetitive experiences in their life that they either don't like or want to change. And it happens. You can use the geographical cure. Right? Move from one place to another. Change all the people in your life. Move away from your family, your friends. Change everything. Somehow, the same patterns keep coming up again over and over.
Yeah.
That's because it's you.
Right.
Who's doing it. And you can delay as long as you want becoming aware of that and doing something different with yourself. But sooner or later, even the soul gets a little impatient. And starts to force things into your face in ways that you can't avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would say is behind a lot of the kind of experiences you've probably heard of where people have a life-threatening accident.
Yeah.
And it really changes so much in their life.
Yeah.
Or they have a major impact in their life in some way. And it's like they become a different person almost. They shift their perspective totally. That's what's going on here.
So if somebody wanted to explore these ideas more, because you mentioned one particular person whose name just left me, Osho. But if they wanted to explore these ideas more, like where would be good places for them to go to learn more about this? Because these, I think a lot of people will be unfamiliar with these particular ways of these ideas, but clearly there's been a lot of thought put into these, a lot of thinkers have contributed to this sort of idea or this sort of way of approaching things. Like, where would be some good beginner spots?
Well, you know, it's interesting in the last 20 years that I've been doing this, the whole idea of channeling has gotten a lot more common.
Okay.
I mean, you even hear references to it on TV. you know, in jokes that, you know, on certain shows, people make, oh, was he channeling so-and-so?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what? Did he say channeling on TV, mass media? And everyone, like, kind of knows what that is?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of channeling going on, and there's some going on the internet. One being who's very popular these days, a being named Bashar. You can get channeled group sessions on the internet. There's another being that's been working for a long time.
Actually, I'm curious, when did you first encounter Vi Wemyss? Or was it more becoming aware of his presence?
One of the big change points in my life came when I finished my graduate work. I spent a year being unemployed looking for a job. This was back in the early 80s.
This is a very common experience these days for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I finally got a job. It was a good job. I got a job in the training department of a large bank holding company in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Which, since I was trained in psychology and teaching and research, you know, was a pretty good fit. I could design training programs and, you know, do some internal studies of management and so on, and became sort of a management development position. Came a point where I became kind of bored with it all and wanted something more. And one of the things that really turned my head in that direction was designing the training program for stress management in the bank, and realizing that, you know, when you go to deal with an issue like stress management, it's not just job skills and job knowledge and the best way to do things. You got to deal with the people where they're at and what's going on in their lives. And that more personal approach really is kind of woke something up inside of me. Let me go this direction. And I left sort of corporate America and decided I'm going to sort of follow what I desire. Spent another year or so being unemployed, starting to pick up part-time work here and there, you know, and doing some career development counseling, places like Polaroid part-time, and doing more of my own sort of personal education in this realm. And I had started to, one of the ways I was working with myself was starting to get body work, which I had never gotten in my life, massage.
Oh, okay.
You know, and one of the ways that you can move with that is a lot of body workers also do what they now call energy work, whether it's Reiki or, you know, aura or working with crystals or so on, just, you know, tuning your energy field, balancing it, harmonizing it, vitalizing it, whatever you want to call it. And in that process, I started to get, you know, more connections with different sort of New Age centers.
Okay.
And there was one here in Portland, Maine, called the Center for New Age Studies. It doesn't exist anymore. At the time, it's run by the person who's now my wife and partner.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, Patricia Marston Snow. And her teacher was one of the primary channels for Vi Wemyss when he first appeared in around the mid-1980s. Her name was Janet McClure. She's since passed on. And so Pat was sponsoring her to come and do some classes here in the Portland area and put out a flyer. Vi Wemyss was the first time I'd ever seen the name.
Yeah.
I had an immediate reaction to it.
Right.
It's like, what? I'm not going to go to that.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's actually a word, you know, that comes from the Latin.
I did not. What What does it mean? It
means we live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyways, I mean, you know, that old, whatever you have a reaction to, guaranteed it's going to come around and you are going to deal with it because your reaction is telling you there is something there for you.
So how were you persuaded out of your initial skepticism to the whole business?
Well, I was getting such good channeled guidance. You know, I was working with a woman down in Massachusetts who was channeling Saint Germain for me.
Okay.
You know, and the thing that, you know, kind of, you could say, blew my mind about it was he could tell me things about myself that I didn't know, but that were just below the surface of my conscious awareness, so that when he said them, I knew immediately they were true, but I could not have come up with that on my own.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whoa, because you can't deny the truth of yourself.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can, but it's harder and harder these days to do that. So it's like having that experience over and over again kind of tells you, okay, there's something here I really should pay attention to. So I was very tuned into, you know, looking for channel guidance, kind of sorting my way through that, you know, not just psychics, because psychics really work in a kind of a different realm. Psychics have different energetic avenues into your energy field where they can kind of read your belief structure and tell you things about yourself that you might not know. Mm. But it's kind of like if you read anyone's belief structure, you can predict what's going to happen to them, because right. most people are just running on their belief structure. Mm. Okay, when we start to work with transformation, we're talking with going outside of that and looking at yourself from a different perspective. And so that's kind of how I was, you know, moving with it and getting more interested in it and going to classes and, you know, then starting to think, oh, I wonder if I could channel myself, you know. Mm. And of course, someone like Vaiwamis, who has a very good sense of humor in addition to being an incredible teacher, he would play my own polarity programming against me and say, you'll never be able to channel Halsey. He said, you don't have the right kind of mind. Well, you know, you tell someone with a PhD they don't have kind of mind. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah?
Yeah. So that's fantastic.
Mm. Cool. And in fact, the first being that I did start channeling with was an ascended master named Hilarion.
Hilarion, okay.
In fact, I think it's Hilarion who's in the Encyclopedia of Catholic Saints, not so much Saint Germain.
I mean, imagine Saint Germain would be. But, I mean, the encyclopedia is a very big,
yeah,
big community. That encyclopedia.
I'm quite Hilarion. Hilarion's a great being. Now there's someone who's been through the incarnation process on the earth, and you know, ascended master, and so on, that sort of thing.
So when you talk about the incarnation process on the earth, is it so if a soul, if I'm understanding this correctly, so if a soul has multiple sort of physical manifestations on the earth in the form of different people who are all sort of attached to the same or sort of this is the wrong
part of the same energetic family
of the same, yeah. Then is it a sort of thing where, like, when someone dies, that sort of portion of that soul kind of recedes back into it and then maybe comes back again in another form? Or is it that all of them might go away at once they're all sort of gone?
Not usually. It depends actually on the point in the evolution experience of the soul itself. Mm. One of the things that has been going on the earth now for the last, I don't know how many years, is a process that's called, it's a process of consolidation on the soul level.
Okay.
Sometimes in metaphysics it's referred to as the third initiation. And it's a process where, rather than continuing to place extensions out into human, you know, incarnations, the soul will start taking the energy of the different lifetimes and consolidating them into one of those extensions. Hmm. And one of the ways that you could think about this is that the greater ensoulment of a person, you know, and in order to do that, the soul has to create a very strong ego personality to be able to receive all of that experience and energy, because it magnifies the programming in your life. And if you have a highly reactive pattern to your experiences, you can self-destruct.
Okay.
You know, so that process of sort of consolidation, you know, is taking place in a lot of people. It's a lot of people. And one of the ways is interesting. One of the ways that I noticed that myself, he told me, you'll find yourself all of a sudden becoming really interested in something you've never been interested for in your life. Mm-hmm. And you really want to dive into it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it might last a year or two, and then all of a sudden,
let's go.
Could care less. What was that?
Yeah.
Well, you could say that's one of the ways the soul kind of finishes up an unfinished experience.
Oh, it's like checking a box.
From another incarnation. That, you know, just to kind of receive it on a certain level outside the conscious awareness of the person, you know, sort of on the soul level.
Yeah. Does it seem that there are a fixed number of souls, or there are sort of new ones as different souls sort of move up and down different levels of evolution and awareness? Or is this sort of a thing you're not privy to?
It gets into the larger question of, you know, what's the earth all about? Because a soul has a choice whether or not to come to the earth. And I'm sure there are souls that are birthed within the earth framework.
Yeah.
But the earth itself is a very unique place in this creation. According to what we've been told from Vaiwamis, who's very connected to the Earth did not really originate in this solar system or even in this universe. That the Earth, as a being herself, comes from outside of this creation. And, you know, one of the things that we know about the Earth, which is why we call her Mother Earth, is that the Earth holds a tremendous amount of feminine energy, okay? And on, you know, on sort of cosmic or universal levels, at some levels, the whole dichotomy of masculine and feminine breaks down.
Yeah.
But the analogy of that is helpful for us in understanding certain things about ourselves. We wouldn't have that distinction here in our experience if there wasn't something we needed to receive about it. And on a metaphysical level, it's the feminine that holds open space for creation.
Yeah. So are there other planets that might have a more masculine...
Most.
Okay.
In this creation. You know, and... You know, this is where you know I like to use the phrase as above, so below. What does that mean? Well, from a multidimensional perspective, you look at what's going on the Earth. That's a reflection for what's going on the spiritual plane. Oh, wars in spirit. It's not all love and light.
Yeah,
it's heaven and hell. What's with that polarity?
Yeah,
you know, so. There's been a long-standing issue, we could say, in the God of this source, this creation, in metaphysics. You know, instead of using the word God so much, we tend to use the word source.
Okay.
As being, because, as Vaiwamis says, well, there are many sources. They each have their own experience, their own creation, and this universe exists entirely within this source. This source has had a number of, you could say, issues of non-reception for the feminine.
Interesting.
And when you look at, you know, if you look at all the cultures of the Earth presently, from the perspective of, let's say, feminism, what do we have to say about it? There's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of non-reception. There's a lot of much more than that going on when it comes to the position of women. Regardless of religion, regardless of culture, it doesn't seem like there's hardly any culture you can point to where there's a true equality of male and female. And we're not talking about equality in the sense of erasing differences, but just, you know, respecting and receiving the differences as a way of working together.
Yeah.
So, you know, magnify that to, you know, the rest of this universe, and you've got a lot of what you see in our science fiction movies and books and, you know, imagery of, you know, wars going on in space and different cultures and so on. And, you know, the whole battle mentality is a very masculine framework. And when you do that on the multiple levels over a long period of time, you tend to really diminish the feminine. Now, remember I said the feminine energy is energy that holds open space for creation. Well, what happens when space collapses? Doesn't sound like something that's good, does it?
Right.
It doesn't sound like something, you know, like a black hole that everything gets sucked into and then it is no more.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, we really want to take some awareness here. Of how do I deal with the feminine in myself?
Yeah.
You know, here I am, this multidimensional being. What parts of me do I relate to as feminine? And Vaiwamis says, think of your emotional body. That's the closest thing you've got to what you would consider to be your feminine essence. Even men have an emotional body. Even men have a feminine essence. And so what do we, you know, look at our relationship with our emotional body? A, very unknown. B, very polarized. I like, I don't like. And, you know, see, very reactive to it. Too much feeling, I'm out of here. That's summarizes. And D, very victimized by it. Victimized by the feelings I don't like. Victimized by my unawareness of my feelings. Victimized by other people's feelings that I feel blamed for.
Yeah.
You know, the whole dynamic that goes on there. And so, you know, on the larger levels, that's a significant issue that is attempting to be addressed through the mirror of humanity, that humanity and the earth hold a mirror for all of creation here to what's going on. And one of the reasons why it's taking place on the physical level, and this is a real key, is that in physicality, you get to see, you get to be aware of what you're doing on the other multidimensional levels that you're not necessarily aware of on that level. Mm. You know, if you think about how we relate to ourselves emotionally, most of it's through the mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
We give names to the different feelings. Mm. We say, well, this feeling means this, and this feeling means this. We attach them to situations. We put them in a box of appropriate, mm-hmm. which means outside of that is everything is inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And then we say that's what we know about our feelings. That's what we know in our mind. But, you know, it's like trying to talk to someone who's speaking a language that you have no idea what it is. You don't understand it, do you? You don't comprehend it. Yeah. The mind and the emotional body speak different languages. And yet here they are existing in you, simultaneously, the same being.
Yeah.
So this is one of the things we're really exploring and learning in our work with Vaiwamas, is how do you approach the emotional body, both from the mind, because that's the starting place most people have,
yeah.
and then go beyond the mind into a realm of learning a different language so that you can relate to yourself in that way outside of the one framework you're most familiar with. You know, some famous person once said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, you tend to treat everything like a nail.
Right.
Right? That's really appropriate for, you know, sort of the mental focus in humanity as a whole these days, whether you, and I'm not talking about education, whether a person is educated or uneducated,
yeah.
there's still a really strong focus on the mind. And so if you're primarily focused with the mind, you tend to treat everything as if it's mental.
Mm.
And that's where we get into a lot of problems. You know, whether it's in business or wherever it is, in education, on a personal level, in your family, doesn't matter. You know, when you try to make everything fit into the round hole because you think that's what it's supposed to fit,
yeah.
doesn't work. And so that's going on multiple levels of self.
That, I think that might be a good place to tie things off. Thank you so much for speaking to me about all these things. And
you're welcome. We've covered a lot of ground, and it's been pretty broad brush. But
right.
I mean, any one of those I could go on for a whole day about,
right.
but something to think about.
Tons of thanks to Halsey Snow for taking the time to chat with me. Really appreciate it. You can learn more about him and learn more about Vaiwamas by going to his website, www.vaiwamasfoundation.com. That's VYWAMUS foundation.com. You're listening to Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn. Join us next month, where I'll be talking to somebody about skinwalkers, which are evil witches in Navajo traditions. And keep listening for Why Do We Listen to Dead People? And if you want to send a question for us to research, send that to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. And speaking of which, that great question we had about Pact the Devil, there's a lot more to talk about there, so look for an addendum to this episode in the podcast version. This was episode 8, so I guess that'll be like episode 8B or 8.5 or what's half of 8? 4? 84? That'll get confusing. Anyway, thank you for listening.